comes again to get me on Pasuk Chaf, page 150, Mizmor Yudches, Pasuk Chaf. From the Pesukim, let's do a few Pesukim together. Vayotzeinu Lamerchav, Hashem has taken me out, Lamerchav, to a wide expanse. Lamerchav. You see, I spent a lot of time in Chaim Berlin. Some people like that, yeah. Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem. Baruch Atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Olam Shakol Li Ebed Varei. When my parents moved to Brooklyn, my parents did not want to put me in Chaim Berlin. They wanted to put me in other yeshivas. The only one that was willing to take me was Chaim Berlin. No one else wanted me. I'm not joking. I'm not joking. No one wanted me. So how could I not have Hakaras HaTorah to the only yeshiva? I don't know. They don't want me.
What grade? Sixth grade. Oh,
sure. They don't want me. The old yeshivas, no one wanted me.
Wanted you. They just didn't have room.
Yeah, don't worry. Abdov, I'm sure for... I'm sure for... So, how could I not have a duty whether... You know, sometimes you say the word Chaim Berlin, you get very, very different reactions. Chabad then, I don't know what it is now, but Chabad then was very, very, I don't know.
Chabad,
which was after Osher Parker. I know, but it didn't have there. All right, whatever. But the reason why I'm saying this is because Lamerchav, every time I see the word Lamerchav in Tehillim, I always think, Misifta Rabbeinu Chaim Berlin. Merchav is the acronym. I think it's a good marketing stunt. Min hametzar korosti ka anani vamerchav ka. Hashem answered me in the sifter Rabbeinu Chaim Berlin. I always make that joke. You have to appreciate. You don't appreciate. You didn't spend time with Chaim Berlin. You're not going to appreciate these nuances.
Is that why you went to high school in Tovar
Das? No, I went to Tovar Das much later. After a post base medrash, the smicha, post, even after base medrash, Okay, so over here, Vayotzeinu Hashem Lamerchav, Hashem took me out to a wide open area. Merchav means a wide open area. Yichalitzeini, Hashem has released me. Chalitzas hanoal. Chalitza means to loosen the straps. Loosen the straps of the shul. Yichalitzeini, Hashem has loosened me, has granted me. Has given me, loosened me. In other words, I think today in this generation we can appreciate Hashem has given me freedom. Freedom. Today people are beginning to realize that not to take freedom for granted. To live a life of freedom. Many countries in this world, people are losing their freedoms. And even in this country, a person's freedom lately over the last decades, people's freedoms have been definitely have been limited. So when it says the word Yechalitzeini, these are very fascinating words, especially in our generation, to appreciate these things, not taken for granted. Lamerchav means a wide open area. Yechalitzeini means to loosen. You're not restricted. When a person lives in a society where there are rules and regulations and everything you're supposed to do, everything you're told what to do, and you don't have autonomy, you don't have your ability to choose, this is the opposite of Yechalitzeini. You're being strapped down. I spoke to a doctor, okay, a very big doctor, which I'm very close with, and he told me that in the last 10 years he has seen with his own eyes a major, major change in the medical profession. Whereas more than 10 years ago, a person goes to a doctor, the doctor was given enormous freedom as to how to treat a patient in anything. Whatever the disease is, every doctor, you do whatever you want. You have to be licensed, you go to medical school, and if the doctor is a good doctor, mimela, people will choose to go to the doctor. The doctor's not a good doctor, he's a nutcase, and does crazy things. Then, you know, it's like capitalism. You know, people who are successful, but a doctor was given, you're a licensed doctor, you went to medical school, you did your residency, you did a fellowship, it takes an enormous amount of work to be licensed as a doctor. And once you're a doctor, it used to be years ago, you have total freedom. No one can say boo to you. Over the last 10 years, or more even so, it all started really in Obama's administration is where there's been a major, major attempt by government to deny, to take away a doctor's ability to choose how to treat a patient. Everything is a protocol. If a person has this disease, a person's diagnosed with this, you know, there could be 1,000 diseases, this is the protocol, and this is what you do. There's someone who is smarter and wiser than you who has made a decision, this is how we're going to treat this particular disease. And if you do not conform to the protocol, you're in a lot of trouble. You cannot try, don't be a chacham and try different medicines.
There's a little bit of a twist.
Yeah.
They claim, yeah, this is the way I think it is, the government and the insurance companies are, and they can't because they'll be sued. They can't tell you how to treat the patient.
It's not true.
We're just telling you what's covered under their insurance.
That's part of it. That's part of it. That's part of it.
That's the way they get around.
But today it's much worse. This has been
and
a very
the bottom line out.
This has been a very subtle, slow trend. First, there's something like, okay, it's not covered. First of all, it's not covered. I'll pay out of pocket. Now, you can't pay out of pocket. Today, in many different areas, no, you can't pay out of pocket. So if a doctor wants to give you a different type of a medication for a disease, no, you can't even pay privately. This is the protocol. If you don't do what you're supposed to do, then you're gonna be, it's very delicate. It's been a trend. First, you'll be censored. They'll give you, I don't know all the details. And today, outright, they'll threaten you. You lose your license. A doctor today is being trained to be just a servant to a higher authority. And maybe in some areas it's good. I'm not saying it's bad. I don't know. I'm not a doctor. I don't know, maybe in some years, this person I spoke to claims that's their opinion. You know, everyone has their opinion. This doctor I'm very close with told me it's a horror what he has seen happen to the medical profession.
Most of this is decided by money.
Whatever, no, it's more than money now.
No, my doctor told me very clearly is this, these insurance companies, the government has henchmen. Who are the henchmen? The MBAs who are supervising the same. This procedure costs too much money. We want you to do this way.
Okay, but let's say you have a patient that I'll pay out of pocket. I'll pay out my own money. You have a gvir, or someone from Saudi Arabia, will come in and the doctor says, you know, the protocol here is not going to work for you. I'll give you a different treatment, but they're not going to pay for it, so therefore you have to pay out of pocket. So it used to be, hey, do whatever you want. You're a doctor, you like, do whatever you want. Now you can't do whatever you want. Now it's been a steady trend. This is the way it's been explained to me. Where there are protocols, and you must conform to the protocols. Who decides? This supposedly great chachamim brought all the way on the top, but so when you look at something like you talk about freedom, a doctor no longer has freedom to practice medicine the way that he sees fit. But put aside money, put aside the money, everything revolves around money, but. Oh, Mordechai is back. Baruch Hashem. It's a frightening concept, and this is what it means to be denied freedom. We take for granted because we're of the age where we grew up as children. We can't even begin to imagine how much freedom we have. I mean, before 9/11, there was no Patriot Act. What is the Patriot Act that was passed by 9/11? The government can basically listen to your telephone calls, can monitor your internet access, can see what's doing in your bank account. I mean, it's incredible that 9/11 totally destroyed. So you'll say, listen, what do I care? I'm not a criminal, right? What do I care? As long as you behave yourself, there's nothing to worry about. Not so fast. It's very, very frightening with stories you hear here and there. You read over here this idea of, this is a very powerful passage when you want to discuss this in light of what's going on in the world, what's always been going on in the world. There's nothing new. The world is just one big, you know, everything goes in cycles over generations. Hashem took me out to a wide open area. Yechalitzeni, Hashem loosened the straps. Yechalitzeni comes from the chalitzas hanoam. You have a pair of shoes, you got to put the shoes on tight. There's no room to wiggle. There's no room.
You what can't. Yechalitzeni mean?
Well, the way they translate it literally means to release me. To release me.
So
what does chalitza mean? Chalitza is hanoah. Yivam. Now we're going to yisach yivamis. Now the oilam yisach yivamis. What is saying yivamis? Chalitzeini means chalitza hanoal. What is chalitza hanoal? To loosen the straps. It's not, the mitzvah is not so much to take the shoe off. The primary part of the mitzvah is for the yivam or the sister-in-law to loosen the straps. The shoelaces, okay, they had very thick shoelaces, which basically are identical to the ritzus of tefillin. What are our ritzus of tefillin? These are shoelaces. Okay, the ritzus of tefillin we wear today are literally shoelaces. That's what you put on. Now you'll see, when you look at your shoelaces, they don't look like that. Yeah, because we live in a modern world, so we have all these new high-tech things that we have, but in time of Chazal, a shoelace was a ritzua. Now you'll say, but it's too wide. It's true, too. Our shoelaces, our ritzuas today are almost double the width that is technically necessary. Double the width. So if you would look at your shoelace, your ritzuas, and you would mamash slice it in half, and you look at the old ancient shoes, it's not, this is exactly what they are.
It's so fair to make a whip for me.
Yeah. Maybe. He'll tell you, technically, it's mutter, but there are two issues. Number one, when the kesher shel tefillin, the place where you tie it, has a tendency to shrivel. The place where you make the knots. So unless you ruin every single day to make sure that it has not shrunk less than the actual size.
Doesn't have to conform the whole way?
It doesn't have to. So you say make it thick over there, make it wide over there, make it thin on the side. That's an idea. Mm-hmm. That's an idea. But for some reason, it's not, since the ritzuas have to be made for the whole Klal Yisrael industry standard, it's not convenient to go make.
I was just wondering.
Yes, you know. Technically, yes. On the other hand, we'll also say to you is that don't stand out. If everyone does it like this, you're looking for trouble by standing out. Why does everyone do it like that? Because it's just not practical otherwise.
When the people
what?
Have very small shalosh.
Yeah.
They have very small shalosh. They never really grow up. Are very tzuris now?
They shrink. They not.
From the watching, and then they make that small shalosh.
Yes.
Do they have tiny?
Some of them do. Some I don't know. I don't know the detail. But I think some do. Some do not. Some do, some do not. You have to ask the seifer. You can cut it yourself. They can custom made it when it's actually
fit it through the
right. I don't know the answer. I'm imagining they have no choice sometimes. If they make very very small tefillin, how you get the ritzu in? They have no choice but to make it to what the minimum size. What? At any event, chalitza sanol means to loosen. When you take this terminology, loosen, and take me out to wide open space, what does it really mean? It means freedom. It means grant me freedom. Do not restrict my every move. Don't tell me where I can go, where I can't go, how to live my life.
How does chalitza mean to loosen?
Chalitza. We always speak about this. Every single word, when you manipulate its vowels, usually goes 180 degrees. So the word, like the classic example Chazal give is Yiskol Yisokel. What do these words mean? Yiskol means to stone, to bury a person in a pile of stones. Yisokel means to take away the stones, to remove a stone. Yishrosh, Yisharesh. Yishrosh means when something takes root. Yisharesh means to uproot. You agree to that?
Okay.
Yishrosh, Yisharesh. Yishrosh is to take root.
There's
Chalutzim or Chalutzim?
Chalutzim. Chalutzim is soldiers.
We're going
Chalutzim.
Chalutzim.
They're deeply embedded. Be'er Itaka means, Chalutzim means when you go to war, it means you have a soldier is tightly, he's very restricted. He's given a mission. You have to think about how the word is used when it comes to chalutzim, soldiers. But you're dealing with. Let's just take the word that you just pointed out. On Birchas Rosh Chodesh, you say chilutz atzamos. In that context, it means that the bones should be firm in their sockets. When does a person have trouble? He needs to go to a doctor. It's when the bones are loose in their joints. A healthy bone is tightly fitted in its socket. And obviously not too tight, because if it's too tight then it's not going to work. But generally 95% of all the different situations that doctors are dealing with regarding people's bones and joints is when they get loose. Due to old age, a person's bones are no longer firmly inserted into the socket. So when we say on Birchas Rosh Hashanah, Chaim shel chilutz atzamos, all of our bones should be firmly positioned in their sockets.
It's the opposite of chilutz.
Exactly. Chalitza, when it's pronounced chalitza, means to loosen. To loosen. With regard to the Yavama, when you open up the straps of the shoe, that is called chalitzas hanoal, the loosening of the shoe. How do you loosen the shoe? You open the straps. When you open the straps, then the shoe is loose. The shoe easily comes off the foot. Mm-hmm. To loosen the straps. When you pray that you shall have good health, you pray for chilutz atzamos, that every bone in my body should be firmly inserted into its socket. It should not be dangling, get loose. When it gets loose, that's bad news. That's bad news. Then it's not functioning correctly. And then grace it's ours. When the bones are not firmly into their socket. This is extremely common. A word in Lashon HaKodesh is the entire spectrum. 180 degrees. When you pronounce it one way, it means this. When you pronounce the same exact letters with different vowels, you go mikotze elakotze. The example that Rashi gives, the Chazal give over and over is yishrosh yisharesh. Something to take root, it takes root, yishrosh. Verse yisharesh, to uproot. Exactly the same letters. No games here. Yishrosh yisharesh.
Really, what is kal and what is
peel? Not kal, no. It's not a matter of kal and peel. It's a matter of pronunciation. This is not a binyan. This is because the meaning is a different meaning. It's a completely different meaning. Binyanim is where it's the same meaning. Question is, what form? Is it an adjective? Is it an adverb? Is it a verb? Is it a noun? This is a different meaning. Yishrosh, it shall take root. Yisharesh, it shall be uprooted. Okay, I think that's very, this is classic. This principle appears throughout Tanakh 100 times. Here's one example, classic example. Yilurim sechti vamos now. Chalitzas hanoal. It means to loosen the straps of the shoe. Loosen the shoe. And Rosh Chodesh, chilutz atzamos. The bones, good health. Good health is all comes down to the bones. If the bones are firmly thrust into their sockets, you're in good shape. That's a sign of good. So we know modern science today that the bones of a person's body is the whole health of the body. Rahman al-Sin, bone marrow. The bone marrow, you see people, Rahman al-Sin, are not well. They have bone marrow transplants, and they become a new person. They revive. And I don't know the whole depth of what the science is all about, obviously, but obviously you see that the health of the bones, it creates hope. You're a dentist, root canal. So is a root canal a good thing? It's good for the dentist. He makes a lot of money. right? Assurance doesn't cover it. But they say, I mean, I don't know, so that says...
It saves the teeth.
It doesn't save the tooth. It's a dead tooth. You do root canal.
Only the middle inner nerve out. The rest of the tooth
is alive.
Connections to the gums are all intact.
But you're killing a nerve. You're killing a nerve.
You're not killing it. It's infected.
Ramach like is dentist.
It makes the tooth weaker. It's going to crack. It can fracture.
The choice is extract or save.
I understand your choices. But to say that makes it better in the sense, no, it's...
He has an infection.
Now we have to treat the weaker tooth.
We release the shoe from the foot, and this is symbolism to release the woman from the zika. You are not going to be in the camp together with the camp. You are going to go this way to get out from the camp.
Very good. You'll be loosened. You're going to be removed.
Again, you release yourself
excellent.
From the ground and you go front. That's how you see Elie Shebao, the ones that came to Israel the previous century, whatever, and the same thing. They came, they released themselves from the Gona and they came to Israel. So it's all release, all of them.
Have release, okay? Okay. Okay, okay. But by our bones, it can't mean release. By bones, it doesn't mean release. By bones. Chilutz atzamos.
I think it is, because sometimes you feel tight.
Too tight.
You go to chiropractor to release.
To make it looser. Okay. So he's saying another shot. Rabbi Dr. Orlian, Zechet Tzadik Levracha, he used to tell me the same thing. He said it means chilutz atzmos means you get good exercise. You got to go jogging every day. You get jogging so you loosen your bone. You loosen your bones. If you don't jog, you don't get exercise. If you don't walk or jog or play tennis, then your bones get like attached to your body. You got to loosen your bones. You got to go exercise. And so you have, that's also another approach. Okay, the ayin panin l'tayra. Okay, let's go over here. Vayotzeni l'merchav v'yichalitzeni Hashem, release me. Release me from my situation where I am locked in. I don't have a place to move. I'm on page 150. He chavetzim, because the Kadosh Baruch Hu, you have a desire. The word chavetzim, remember way back, years ago, we learned Sefer Mishlei. And we had the word chavetz 100 times. The word chavetz. Chavetz is a very hard word to translate. It all depends on the context. Chavetz means a desire. Obviously, it means a desire, but there's a lot more to the desire that maybe we'll see a little soon. Pasuk chav aleph.
David talking to Hashem.
Absolutely. David over here is personifying Klal Yisrael. In Sefer Tehillim, David is the embodiment of Klal Yisrael. And David is speaking to Hashem on behalf of the entire Klal Yisrael. Pasuk chav aleph. Yigmaleni Hashem ki tzitka kadosh baruch hu, you should reward me. Gemul. Gemul means either reward or punishment. You get what you deserve. So a tzaddik, what does he get? He gets reward. A rasha gets punishment. The word yigmaleni does not mean reward. The word yigmaleni means to get what you deserve. And depending on the situation, the person is, it's either going to be reward or it's going to be punishment. Kid Sidki, David here says, being that I am a tzaddik, and therefore the reward for me will be good, will be benefit. Kivor yodai, the purity of my hands. Very beautiful expression. We'll see in the Farshim more about this. The court, according to the purity of my hands, Yoshivli, return to me what I deserve. When a person does a chesed, you can do a chesed for many reasons. Some do chesed only, it's just because of, payback. it's for ulterior motives. When a person does a chesed, why are you doing the chesed? Is it because you want to earn points? You have some ulterior motive? So then when the day comes, like the Shbrach is going to reward the person, the reward is not going to be so significant. Just because you did a kindness, okay, no good deed goes unrewarded. I know you think no good deed goes unpunished, but when a person does a good deed, the bottom line is as long as the person, the recipient is benefit. Yes, that is absolutely true. No, I'm not. It's not Adrabba. Some say that's the only thing that counts. That's the only thing that counts, that as long as the poor man gets the money, whatever, at any cost, at any means, whatever your kavan is. Yeah, that's obviously true, but there's a, without a shadow of a doubt, a higher level, that when a person does the chesed, it should be l'shem shemayim. And l'may nafgamina, will the person repeat the chesed? When a person does the chesed only for ulterior motives, when the day comes and those motives don't exist anymore, person is trying to get a position. So he knows that if he wants to get a job, and he knows his candidacy is been presented, and if we'll go now and we'll give, we'll do a chesed, we'll go to the person that's making the decision, if he has him, he's a Rebbe in the class, and he has a grandson in his class, and he'll go and he'll do something good for this kid, it'll trickle down to the grandfather. Oh, the Rebbe was so good to my grandchild, he did this for him. All right, you know what? I'm going to give him a bonus. I'm going to give him another position. He's going to go higher on the social, wherever he is. But l'may nafkamina, now that he got what he wants, and then he has a new class, is he going to go out of his way to the students of the class to do their benefit? No. The only reason why I was so good in my previous position was for ulterior motive. But if Rebbe is trained to do the right thing, L'shem Shamayim, then when he gets the promotion eventually, in his new environment, he'll do the same thing. If a person does something L'shem Shamayim, it may not be relevant in this particular situation at hand. He may have an ulterior motive, he may do L'shem Shamayim. But the Nafkamina, if he's doing L'shem Shamayim, will be what's going to happen next time. What's going to be in the next situation? If it's L'shem Shamayim, you'll be doing L'shem Shamayim in the future. If it's not L'shem Shamayim, then if the reason is not present, you're not going to do it again. David says, Hashem, reward me for my good deeds. And then he says something very powerful. Kivor yodai yoshev li. It's not just what I did. Look, I'm a great guy. I supported all these poor people. But Hashem, you should know I did it l'shem shamayim. I did it with purity, without any reason, without any ulterior motive. According to the purity of my hands, Yashivli returned to me reward. Pasuk Abeski Shamarti Darchi Hashem Vlo Rashati Melukai. It's a beautiful pasuk. I guarded the ways of Hashem Vlo Rashati Melukai. I did not act evil with wickedness. Of course not. This requires explanation. It's a very incredible pasuk. Vlo Rashati Melukai. I did not behave like a Russia. A Russia? That's a pretty strong word to say. Over here, David over here is saying, Hashem, be good to me. Yigmaleini. Kitzidki, Kishamarti, Kivaryadi, and all of a sudden of Lord Rashati Melokai? My high. What's going on over here? We're dealing over here with David is a tzaddik. Would David ever fathom to be a Rasha? Over here, he's talking to Hashem, Kitzidki, Kivaryadi, Kishamarti, Darchi Hashem, and Hashem, I wasn't a Rasha. Are you talking? That's the climax? That's right. You gotta watch out in this world. People who are very big tzaddikim and they do a lot of good things, they're mois and nefesh, and then they do this for years, for decades, and then they get frustrated. The person has to be on guard his entire life, every second, and then it comes to the end of his life after serving in a job for decades, and he can very much feel that he's been taken advantage of, and he's been abused, and no one appreciates what he does. And then at the very end, at some point, he can do something very evil.
He gets worse.
What? Very evil. Something that he wouldn't even fathom.
Noah at age 80?
Yeah, that's the way the world goes. That's the way the world goes. You know, a person, Hashem, Kiloi B'tzadik, Hashem does not have faith in tzaddikim until the very end. Because the very last moment, the person, Rachmana Litzlan, can do something that's very not proper. Not proper. And this is a very scary sequence of psukim. David, when he's young, Hashem, when I was young, when I was my 20s, Kitzidki, who was like me? Who did things like what I did? And then as I got older, I was a guardian, Kishamarti, Darche Hashem, and then Kivor Yodi. As I was middle age, I did things with purity. Did you see how I davened for the Amud and the Yom HaRoyim? You see what I was like in those days? And then I Kishamarti, Darche Hashem, and now comes the real Nisoyim. Now when you've earned the trust of the Tzibur, of Klal Yisrael, and the riding high, and then things in life take a turn. Things go sour, and you're abused. You're not appreciated. Someone says bad things about you, and you have already at this point the trust of the Tzibur. Ki roshat v'loy roshat, not be act in a way of rishus. Of rishus. Talk about, you know, l'havdil elef, I'll talk about politics. Politics. The people they campaign. And they campaign on, you know, they pledge what they're gonna do for the Tzibur, and they've done things in the past for the Tzibur, and they earn the trust of people. And then all of a sudden there's a big issue in society, and they have enormous power, and they betray the people for their own private benefit. They whatever the reasons may be, whether they're good or whether they're bad, they have enormous power, and they do things that cause many people enormous tsar, enormous pain, and these people can arguably say it's not just what you've done. This is we didn't elect you to abuse your power, and turn against us. For whatever your reasons may be, this is not something that was ever done before. Okay, everyone has their way of looking at things. They're looking at things, and sometimes the people who make the complaints, sometimes they're actually right, depending on the situation.
But politicians, sometimes if they choose A, they harm certain people, they choose B, they harm certain people. There's no real choice there. Sometimes.
Okay, and I'm saying every situation, you can't generalize, every situation is different. But there are situations where, in hindsight, look back 20 years ago, look back 100 years ago, and when you know, hindsight is 20/20, you look back and you can say that this person abused his position. As things unfold, it's almost impossible to really know what's right, what's wrong, unless it's an outright violation of the law. But a lot of things, what is your real agenda? What, you've earned the trust of the people because of your good deeds, of Kitzidki Kivor Yodi, Kishamariti Darche Hashem, and now you've earned our trust. You're put in a position of enormous power. And then all of a sudden, you abuse your power. V'loi Roshati. It's a shocking sequence of events. To say the word Roshati at the end of this, you would think you should start off. You start off with Roshati. V'loi Roshati. I wasn't a Rasha. And Adrabo, I worked my way up to be a Tzaddik. And then I became a Chosid. I was Kivor Yodi. And then I erected safeguards. Kishamarti. The correct order of these words would be V'loi Roshati, then it's Kitzidki, then it's Kivor Yodi, and then Kishamarti. What's going on here? You put Roshati at the very end? Yeah, that's talking where it belongs. Kachi Darko Shaloylam. You earn the trust through showing you that you're a tzaddik, and then comes the real Nisoyim. Not to abuse your power and your behavior. Pasik Chav Gimel Kichol Mishpatav L'Nedi. All of Hashem, your laws are in front of me. V'chukai Sav Loi Osir Mimeni. V'chukai Sav means.
By the way, this reminds me what Yaakov said in Lavan Garti. Tarayan Mitzvot Shamarti V'lo Lamati Ma'asav Arayim.
I did not learn from his evil deeds. Yeah.
It's the same kind of thing here. The same thing.
It's very. I once heard of Blaise Ginsburg. You know where Blaise Ginsburg is? Another?
Yeah.
So I once heard him, they start. What? Who doesn't know Blaise Ginsburg? So he once. This is already like 10 years ago. I was there. Someone, I don't know if they still do it. His yard sale, I think his yard sale is Chof Hei Elo. The Chof Tzai. Is that one his yard sale? I think it's Chof Hei Elo. Chof Dalit? Chof Dalit. So for some reason, I used to hang out there a lot, right next to Torah Das, in Lev Avram. Rabbi Weinfeld. I just met him recently, Rabbi Weinfeld. And I don't know why they just made his brother. The one from over here on 2022nd, he has a brother who is the Rav of Dinov. You know, Rabbi Baruch knows. So he took over the Dinov. The Dinov Rebbe used to be there on East 9th Street and 18th Avenue. And Dinov Rebbe, he moved to Williamsburg. He built a whole maluch. It's very much slich there here. And Rabbi Weinfeld bought his shul. Rabbi Weinfeld lives upstairs and downstairs. They have a very nice shul. And Rabbi Weinfeld, he really, really, really made a major roshim on the community. He redid the shul, shulurim, and davening. Made into a makom Torah, very choshva thing what he did over there in Kensington, right a couple blocks from here. And I don't know, I remember that year they started, someone very much wanted to do this, to have a yahrzeit asifa for the Chofetz Chaim. They're like, you know, all these big signs, everyone should come and then have just speakers to talk about the Chofetz Chaim on his yahrzeit. Chof Dalet Elul. Reb Leizer Ginsburg, he spoke. And he said some shocking things. I never heard these things. By the end of the life of the Chofetz Chaim, the very end of the Chofetz Chaim's life, the last weeks, he was destitute poor. He mamish did not have what to eat. Extreme dire poverty, can't even imagine. He died like that. And he sent, he read letters that he sent mamish begging someone to send him a few dollars just to eat. You didn't have it sounds shocking, right? The Chofetz Chaim. Today, you're making the people of the Chofetz Chaim, you have $1 million in a second. All the Gevirim would go. Madach, they run to his kever. Then Moisa Nefesh to go to Russia, and they're going more so fast. They were Moisa Nefesh to go to Radin, to his kever. Dirshu, when he signed the Mishnah, they run to the to Radin, to the kever. So you could imagine how much money they would give today to support the Chofetz Chaim. But the Chofetz Chaim was a very poor man. And we know that he was very poor from the biographies. You read all the nice biographies of the Chofetz Chaim, you know he's very poor. But these stories are not printed. These stories are not printed about the very end of his life, the very, very end. And he read letters. And the Chofetz Chaim was prolific. I mean, what did he not write about? How many Sefarim did he write? The Mishnah Berurah, besides the Mishnah Berurah and Shmiras HaLashon. He wrote Kuntresim. He wrote letters, there's so many things from the Chofetz Chaim. And the very end of his life, he mamish did not have a pruta. And he was literally starving. And Radin, it seems that was in between World War I and World War II. It was the situation was dire beyond our belief. And no one talks about it. No one even talks about it. And he wrote all these letters. And can you imagine the nisoyon of the Chofetz Chaim, his whole life, avodas Hashem, promoting Yiddishkeit, and Mishnah Berurah, the Ber Halacha, in the Mishnah Berurah, the Ber Halacha, is Kol HaTorah Kul. You go through Mishnah Berurah, tells you the Halacha, also no one can write like the Chofetz Chaim. All the copycats today, who try to make Svarim like the Chofetz Chaim, pathetic, compared to the Koyach of the Chofetz Chaim. The Chofetz Chaim had a Koyach of writing. Incredible how what he packs in on one page is a shuckle to many people, a whole safer from other people, not even. And besides that, his ability to write, his writing is second to none. You don't even appreciate his ability, his koyach of writing is incredible. And then the Ber Halacha, in the Ber Halacha, that would be all you will get very upset. In the Ber Halacha is every chiddush of Rav Chaim. Out of all of the Gedolei Achroinim, you'll find every svara you ever heard of in the Olam HaYeshivais, it's all in the Ber Halacha. You have no way to find it, where he says the svara. He says he is, literally, Kol HaTorah Kula is in the Mishnah Berurah. It's just mind-boggling what he packed in there. In the Shaar HaTzion, these golden nuggets, you just read all the Shaar HaTzion. People today have written svarim, whole svarim, taking the Shaar HaTzion, and analyzing the Maran Mekamos in shock of what was in his head, how he doesn't know these Maran Mekamos of what he was putting over there. It's not, besides the humility, he puts the Ber Hativ on the page. I mean, the whole thing is shocking. And Sefer Chofetz Chaim has become, you know, in Klal Yisrael, and all the other Kuntresim dealing with the whole gamut of Klal Yisrael, it's not to be believed. Could you imagine the Nisayan that he died in a matzav where he literally had a beg, like with the greatest bizyonos, more than any collector you've ever seen come around in our neighborhood. He read the list. It's shocking what he says in those letters. When people come to shul, I have 12 children, can you please help me? You know, Avmeir likes to have a conversation with these people, I know. but people didn't mevaza themselves.
He didn't have a following?
No, he didn't. He can barely sell, no one even wanted a sfarim. How many people he had to go beg to sell the sefer? I know Rabbi Levitz, he passed away, Rabbi Levitz, Rabbi Yaakov Levitz, here on 18th Street between K and L, right around the corner. So I remember this so many years ago, when I was a little kid, he used to have a store on Coney Island. Would you believe it? He had this like an Eichel store on Coney Island. So I remember we were in eighth grade and we were learning Mishnah Brewer. And I was in eighth grade. And I remember you have to get Mishnah Brewer. You have to have, that was part of the required Sefarim books. So I went to the store, my parents gave me money. I went to the store. For the first time I met Rav Yaakov Levitz. And I told him, I want to buy a Mishnah Brewer. I still have that Mishnah Brewer, the old Mishnah Brewers, which today you couldn't even get a dime for, because today they've been reprinted 1,000 times over. And I remember this conversation. He was telling me that when he first started selling Sfarim, he couldn't sell even one set of Mishnah Brewer. He had a couple of sets. No one wanted to buy them.
You had your kids at Shulchan Aruch.
Exactly.
What did you need?
He couldn't sell. There's a famous picture of Rav Aaron Kotler. He always learned Chofetz Chaim, Mishnah Brewer, Rav Aaron Kotler. And then he told me already, you know how many years ago this goes back before Maaseh Bereishis. He told me, and now, no matter how many I keep in stock, I never have enough. But he told me when he first started, he couldn't even get one person to buy. Yeah. Until his wife what?
Born was set.
On 28th.
He never looked
into a Mishnah Brura. He never looked into the Mishnah Brura. Okay, I also remember in Tar Vidas. In Tar Vidas there was someone there. He told me that he remembers his grandfather. His grandfather was, we're going back long, long ago. He said that when he saw the Mishnah Brura, he was literally disgusted. Like basically, what? Why? That's how you learn. Shulchan Aruch. You learn the Magen Avram. You learn the Taz. You learn the Nisei Caleb. You don't go on. Mishnah Brura is like basically like the art when the Art Scroll Gemara first came out. Everyone knows Rav Shach. Rav Shach was on a crusade to put Art Scroll Mecherim. That's how you learn Gemara. You learn Gemara with the art school. That's how you learn Gemara. Rav Shach, they showed him the art school Gemara. He was literally about to pen a cherem, and they sent shaluchim from all over the world to beg him. It's a new generation. Don't do this. And the end was he didn't. The end was. The story goes. It seems like they have Aaron Shachtin from Chaim Berlin. He should be zund. Chaim Berlin, he was very, very instrumental in preventing that from happening. Now you have to appreciate if what they would have happened. No one knows what would have been. So let's say Rav Shach would have put a cherem. No, what would have happened? I don't know what would have happened. It would just take a little bit longer, right? It'll take another.
The business would have closed.
It wouldn't have closed. Not likely. It's not
my
like.
Uncle was very sensitive to this.
Right. Oh, that's a success. That's a siyata d'shmaya. That was a siyata d'shmaya. He was machnia himself to the Gedolei Yisrael to an extreme. That's why Art School is Art School. That's why every single person that look at every there's not a home a Jewish home there's not an Art School product. Yeah, they just was Yishalmi. That was his crown jewel. At the end of his life, he says that his crown jewel was the Talmud, the elucidation of the Talmud Yishalmi. Yishalmi is a sefer chosum. And the art school did is beyond belief what they did. Beyond belief. And they just sent, did they make a dinner?
No, they just sent down a...
Oh, if he was alive, he would have made a dinner like none other. Because when he finished, when they finished the art school, he made a dinner. I have the journal. I didn't go to that. I was invited. You know, you have to be from the club of billionaires to go to that dinner. But someone that I know in the shul, he went to that dinner, not because he's a real mishpacha, and he brought me home. He brought home a whole collection of paraphernalia, journals, and I have it at home. I said, like, he gave it to me. He doesn't even want. I have that journal. Unbelievable. He would have made, if Meir Zlatowicz Zatzal would have made today for the Yerushalmi a dinner like he never saw your whole life, because he really believed. He said himself, the art school Gemara, if I didn't do it, someone would have done it. Not like him, but they would have done something. Yerushalmi was the crown jewel, of everything art school did, culminated in being able to, the expertise and the know-how in being able to produce a Talmud Yerushalmi in English and in Hebrew. And it's true, it's unbelievable. It's one of a kind, really. But any event, he was Machnia himself. How do we get into this discussion? I already forgot. How in the world do we get into this discussion? I have no idea. I'm losing my mind. Chavetz Chaim, the Chavetz Chaim. So today, when art school first started, there were people that wanted to ban art school. When the Mishnah Berurah wrote the Mishnah Berurah, they wanted to ban the Mishnah Berurah. What are you doing? Being a liquid? Okay, and the Mishnah Berurah did not even, he shied away from modern day shilas. In the Mishnah Berurah, there are no modern day questions.
He left exactly.
He left at all the, well, the Dershah Yishno doesn't have so many, they make more trouble than they just show. They confuse you more. It's not, you know, the Yerushu, it's interesting what they do with the Yerushu. It's interesting. All right, but it's good. Everyone likes it. The Sfardim that made their own, the other people that made their own, they opened up a whole new world. It's very good what they did. No complaints. And, you know, the time you shy, like, even passing that machine matzah, not a word. Why didn't the Mishnah Berurah discuss machine matzah? Why not? A lot of things. A lot of modern controversies. Electricity.
They had machines.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they had it. There was machine matzah. Electricity. He did not talk about electricity. There are many things. I once saw a whole list. Okay, the Mishnah Berurah is a world to itself. And so the Chavetz Chaim, I mean, what they're trying to illustrate, there's probably no one who did more for Klal Yisrael in Halacha, Lashon Hara. Okay, there are many people here, you know, it's not me to say who did this, who did that, Chas V'Shalom. There are many people that are incredibly influential in what they did for Klal Yisrael in the last century. Okay, only Hashem, none of my business. But one of those people who did incredible things is the Mishnah Chavetz Chaim. And yet, could you imagine the Nesoyon at the end of his life had nothing? Today, the Chavetz Chaim is a legend, Sha'in Kamahu. And when he died, and this is what it says over here, in his Pesukim. Over here, Yigmeleni Hashem Kitzidki, Kivor Yodi Yoshev Lik, Yishmarti Darchi Hashem. And then at the V'loi Rashati Melokoi, at the end, at all the Rashati? Rashati? Wasn't it Rasha? How you talking? Tzaddikim, study history, who did incredible things at the very, very end. The nisyonos are so great. Chas v'shalom, a person like that can be bitter. After all this I've done for Klal Yisrael, I don't have a morsel of bread, what to eat. I have to beg like the biggest schnorrer. God gave those letters, what he wrote. To beg like the biggest schnorr for someone to give. He wrote in that memory, this goes back many years. I have literally nothing in the house. No food, nothing. I just need a few ruble to buy the most beer necessities just to survive. And he died like that. He died in that matzah. He didn't die this glorious death with the whole Klal Yisrael coming to his levaya. You know, they show that picture. There's a picture of his levaya. How many people were by that Levaya? How many people came to the Levaya? 200? 100? 200? How many people know? Not even, right? How many people know in that picture? When Vadi Yosef, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, passed away, how many people came to his Levaya? I think half a million people. The whole Eretz Yisrael only has 7 million people. And not all of them are even Jews. And most of them are not, many of them are not religious. Half a million people came to his Levaya. Pretty impressive. Okay, even if it's not a half, maybe it's 400,000. 300,000. Okay, that's serious numbers. All right, let's go. Kichol, let's see the mitzvahs of Pasachav. Get carried away over here a little bit. Pasachav, mitzvahs of Pasachav, lemerchav. Mitzvahs of Pasachav on the bottom, just this page, page 181, lemerchav, lemokav, rochav, lehainatz, lemiyadam. Hashem has taken me out into a wide open expanse to be speared from their hands. The chalitzeni hoitziani min ha-meitzar, from the straits. Min ha-meitzar, korosi ko, that's what we say in Achalav. Min ha-meitzar, korosi ko, Anoni v'merchav ka. The word merchav stands in contrast to the meitzar, the boundaries. You're confined into in a very narrow path. Kitzitki kifitzitki kiloi harioisi es echad mehem. I did not harioisi es achad. So here he learns what I told you was a bit of a drush, not totally, but here he says, he over here in the mitzvah stuff, he's doing something very interesting. He's taking the word v'loydashati me'lokoi that said later, and he says, I did not act with evil even to one of them. What is one of them? The mitzvahs or the people? It's not so clear what he means. Kitzidki kifiki loy hare oisi es echod mehem. I did not behave with evil regarding one of them. Either it means one individual in Klal Yisrael. Every person, no one has a complaint against me. I have no detractors. You're not going to find on a blog someone saying nasty things about me. Or it means every single one of the mitzvahs. Every single mitzvah was precious. I remember with Siegfried, he once told us that there was a guy in shul, he was a tzaddik, he did everything. Everything he did. You know, he came early, gave tzedakah. There was one thing he didn't want to do, hashanis. He didn't refuse to walk around the bima with the lulav and esrei on Chol Hamoed Sukkos.
I don't know why. I understand.
Why? And like,
crazy.
Oh, so it's like and he said it's like it doesn't make any sense. This fellow, he's a tzaddik. He really is good. This thing doesn't do it. It's like this is nonsense. What are you doing? This is nonsense. I don't do nonsense. That nonsense is Shulchan Aruch. It's the Gemara. It's in the Gemara. The Gemara talks about this. It's the Shulchan Aruch. It's the Minhag Yisrael. You're not a decision maker here. You're not a decision maker if we should do Hashanis or we shouldn't do Hashanis. There are people like that. They do 99% of what they're supposed to do. When it comes to certain things, it's not just, you know, Stam. Tired.
Reasonable explanation, why not?
Why? No, he didn't. That's what he, I remember he told him, he didn't. He didn't have a good, people challenged him. They challenged him. And he had a distaste for it. Ask him, okay? Ask him if it's true. He had this distaste, and I remember by Siegfried, this goes back 100 years ago, tell him what I said, you tell him that I'm telling you it's true. He had a It was very disturbing to Rabbi Siegfried. How a person can be, everything is kosher v'yosher. And one thing, there's a distaste. You're not a decision maker. You don't understand, so you don't understand. You're part of the club, you're not part of the club. It's not for you to decide. It's one thing a person doesn't do one thing because he just can't. Listen, I can't, what? It was more the way I remember in his mind. It's not Sheval Tas. It was like he expressed himself. There was an expression of disgust. You're not a decision maker. If you would just be Sheval Tas, all right. Listen,
maybe
not everyone is perfect.
The way that people would conduct themselves going around.
Maybe
you
I'm making a mistake.
Around. In a lot of places, you really make
I know.
Quarter the way around. And then the other guy's coming
I know, listen.
And running around.
I know exactly what you mean. I know exactly what you mean. I'm with you. Whatever it is. But there's a way to protest. There's a peaceful protest, and there's a violent protest. Okay? Everyone understands. Not everyone does everything, you know? Inside the guards. There are people that don't, you know, there are certain things. Everyone has their weak points. Okay? But just because you're weak doesn't mean you reject it. David over here makes it, Mesut over here says very powerful. David says, there's nothing I don't do. I do it all. V'loi roshati me eloi koi. I was not roshati, not even one thing. Ech, it's a very powerful thing for a person to be able to say at the end of his life. Ki loi hare oisi es echod mehem. I don't agree with it. It doesn't make any sense to me. I don't like it. All right, you don't like it? Go through the motions. Go through the motions. Do the best you can do. Kivor yodai, kofel adav mi lashonas, me lokoi mi mitzvahs, elokoi from the commandments of my God. Let's see Rashi. Rashi pasuk, kof alef kitzidki, kitzedek, lechti, acharav bamidbar. Rashi is lefitshi tosoi. Rashi learns the entire song. Shiras dad is all in reference to what? It's all in reference to Yitzias Mitzrayim. Kitzedek, lechti, acharav bamidbar. This is an incredible insight. Rashi learns emuna. Emuna is synonymous with tzedek. That's a shocking thing to say. Lechtech acharai bamidbar be'eretz lozer. We always focus on that of emuna. Emuna pshuta, to go out into the desert. If you want to know what it means to go into the desert, I never appreciated this till Meir Appeldorf opened up my eyes to read a book by, called The Gold, I don't remember what it's called, by Bloom. The name of the author is Bloom. Bloom, what's his first name? Are you there? The name of the author, his name is Bloom. It's a crazy book. It's a very interesting book. It's an amazing, amazing, amazing story. An amazing story. It's not even to be believed.
About Howard Bloom.
Howard Bloom, what's the name of the book?
The Gold of Exodus.
I highly recommend you read it. If there's only one thing you take out of it, even if you don't believe the story, even if you think the whole thing is sheker, there's one thing that you'll take out of it for sure. You will gain an appreciation what it means, lechteich acharai bamidbar be'eretz lo yizuruah. The way they describe what it's like to travel in the Saudi Arabia desert, that is priceless. You can go your whole life and you'll say, lechteich acharai bamidbar be'eretz lo yizuruah. I always thought, you know, I always thought what it meant. It's like you're in the country, you go to camp, Camp Magen Avraham, and they take you out on a hike. Tuesday is hike day. You go on a hike, you go, whatever, you go on a hike, and you go to like Sheldrick, you go here, you go on a hike, you go down these, in the city, you don't see these type of roads in the city.
The bus comes to pick you up.
Right, you go on a hike, right, you walk along the side of the road. Once in a while, there were some dogs, you got scared, there were some dogs over here. Right, that's, I always thought, oh, so the whole Klal Yisrael traveling in the Mizbar, it's like they're in the Catskills, and they're going, you know, down one of these semi-paved roads to go for ice cream, right? That's what I really, in my mind, that's what I think about it. You're going to the forest, this. No. That's not what was going on. Lechtech acharai bamidbar. The way he describes, the way Howard Bloom describes what it means to go into the desert in Saudi Arabia in a sandstorm where there is literally nothing, with the most intense heat you can possibly imagine, and to imagine that 3 million people traveled 40 years in this terrain. Okay, I just said a few words. There's a whole book describing what it's like. It will give you a whole new appreciation of what it means, lechtech acharai bamidbar be'eretz lo yizuruah. When on Yom Neroi, when the Shliach Tzibur, when he says those words, someplace they say it very nice. They sing it, the migunim, this nusach migunim, right out in Chaim Berlin, of Nachmari Foyer, he really goes to town on those words. He has his own, nusach, lechtech acharai bamidbar be'eretz lo yizuruah. You want to know what that means? Read that book. You'll get a time of what it means.
And what great records in 1910, the author from Yemen, Israel, to the Caribbean, just this came,
barely hit.
To Palestine, Saudi.
So here he's saying something very interesting, Kitzidki, this you never heard of before, that going in the desert, it's Lechtech Acharai Bamidbar, Be'eretz, it's not called Tzedek, it's called Emuna. Whoever called that tzedek? Tzedek means I did good deeds. I'm a good man. I did good deeds. I gave tzedakah. I did chesed. What's Rashi saying? Rashi is saying a chiddush we've not heard before. Kitzedek according to the righteousness of Lechti Acharav Bamidbar. Just shocking Rashi. Whoever heard of this Rashi? That's what it means, going in the desert. You don't associate going in the desert with the principle called tzedek, righteousness. That's called emunah. I don't know. This requires eon. Tzedek, Rashi says it's called tzedek. Going in the desert is called an act of tzedek. I don't think anyone would say such a thing based upon the way we've been taught, our chinuch. You ask any person, tell me, describe the midah of going in the desert for 40 years with no hope of survival. Zero chance of survival. And Hashem tells you, go, and you go. Describe the attribute. Mishpat, tzedek, it's jeopardy, choice, multiple choice. Tzedek, mishpat, chesed, emunah. There's not a living soul amongst the Jewish people that wouldn't say it's emunah. And Rashi says it's tzedek. Can you explain that? I can't. Let's go further, out of time. Kivar, l'shon nikius, k'moy var levav, a pure heart. Dover acher, yishlach, now Rashi is going back to the previous psukim. Rashi over here is going back. Rashi now is taking us all the way back to the beginning of the Mizmar. And he's telling us, Dover acher, yishlach, nimar mikach, yikachayni, k'negin atzme amar. Dover over here is talking about himself. Al Shem Hamalach Shabba Besela Hamach Lekois Liftsois Es Shaul Me'olach. Okay, so we're talking over here about that Rashi is deviating now, and he's telling us that this is the personal song. Until now, Rashi has taken this Mizmor and has devoted it to Klal Yisrael in reference to their history. Now David is getting personal, and he's talking about different events of his life. And one of the famous stories of David's life is the place called the Sela HaMachle place. This was a place where David almost lost his life. Shaba, Al Shem HaMalach, Shaba B'Sela HaMachle place, Liftsois Es Shaul Me'alav, to remove. Liftsois means to what's a good word, Liftsois? It means to scatter, is that the right word? It means to mislead him, to get him off his back. Shenemar umalach bo el Shaul. Okay, we have to go back and review the story. I don't know the story too well. I forgot it. Maybe I never knew it. I did learn once upon a time Shmuel the Eon, but I forgot everything by now. And time to do it again. But in this event, to go look at the psukim here. This event, David Hashem saved David from Shaul, and therefore he's referring to this. In this location, David had an opportunity. He had an opportunity to kill Shaul. He had many opportunities to kill Shaul. Once, when David was sleeping, the whole machna fell asleep. Can you imagine that? The whole machna, all the guards fell asleep. Amazing, huh? Everyone fell asleep. So, you know why? Know why they fell asleep? I didn't share that much for them. No joke. And the other situation was where David had to go to the Beis HaKisei. He had to go to the Beis HaKisei, David. And sure, David was, Shaul go there, and he was at Tzenua, and he completely covered his entire body when he went to the Beis HaKisei, and in an extreme lack of tzinius. And David did not take advantage of the modesty of Shaul by killing him. Instead, just to remind that I could have done, he cut the corner of his garment. And David here is thanking Hashem for saving him. Ki hol mishmatov l'negdi, tamid, samti, oisam l'neged inai. David says, I always put them before my eyes. Now let us maybe just do one Maimon Chazal because it's very late. Let's look at the Malm. There's one Chazal, and we'll stop. The Amar, it's on the second wide line on page 150. It's page 150, the second wide line, He just explains these words. The Omar Yigmaleni Hashem Kitsitki Kivar Yadi Yoshivli. The Yesh Hevdel Bein Gimul Bein Hashava. It's a very nice Malbum. This is a classic type of Malbum, where the Malbum differentiates between similar words, synonyms. Over here in Pasuk Yichav Beis, we are Pasuk Yichav Aleph. We have two different terms to describe reward. Hashem rewards or pays back a person for his deeds. And there are two different expressions of gemul, and then this word is yigmeleni, and then there is yoshivli. What is the difference between yoshivli and yigmeleni? So he says, v'yesh hevel bein gemul uvein hashava, shahashava hi kifi hamaseh v'yapula, v'yagmul hi kifi tuchunas ahava oy hasina sheyesh le'olof. Beautiful difference. Shagmul nikshar tomit im hispa'aliyos, im hispa'aliyos. The word gemul relates more to the manner of way it's done. In other words, we talk about hashava. Did you give the poor man money or not? A poor man appealed to you for a handout. Poor man comes to a person on the subway. Can you give me a dollar? Can you give me something to eat? Can you give me? So I gave him. I took out of my pocket a dollar, I gave it. Or I took out of my pocket a sandwich and I gave it to him. Bottom line is I gave him a sandwich. I gave him money. So Hashem will reward you for that. There is no question Hashem will reward you for that. That's called Hashava. But now comes part two. How did you give to the poor man? Did you take it out and throw it at him with disgust and say, go get a job. Here's a dollar. Last time I'm giving you a dollar. Go get a job. Get a life. Go to a shelter. You stink. What are you doing here on the subway? Get out of here. Here's a dollar. Get lost. Is that is called hashava. Gemul means you give it with chesed, with here. Buy yourself something good to eat. Take care of yourself. You mechazek it. Hashava gemul represents the emotion, the method in which you give it the stock.
What's the translation?
Say again?
What's the translation?
Translation of gemul? Recompense. Is that how you pronounce it? Recompense? How do you say the word in English?
Reward.
So it's not really reward, because reward has a connotation of good. Gemul clearly means payback. You get what you deserve.
Sahab.
Sorry?
Payment.
Payment. But what kind of payment is it? It's either for a good deed, you get reward. For a bad deed, you get punishment. That's gemul. That's what it means. A rasha gets gemul. You have 100 psukim in Tanakh. Hashem, give them their gemul. Give the wicked gemul.
What's due to them. I think payback is the benefit.
Payback. There's a good payback and there's a bad payback. It all depends what you did, what the payback is. Now, that is really called hashava, yashivli. Gemul means the emotion, the method in how you do the good deed or the bad deed. You can do it with kindness or you can do it with rishus. You have a person who's an executioner. He works for the government. And the government says, "This is what I do for a living. I have to execute you." But as you put the person out of his misery, you do it with rachamim.
You do it
with rachamim. It always haunts me, this image. I don't know what to make of this. Remember Saddam Hussein? Remember those days? So someone there, those the early days of cell phones. The early days. So someone snuck in a cell phone of them hanging Saddam. I'm sure you've all seen this. When they hung him, Saddam, they were not allowed to do that. Someone illegally snuck in and they took the video of them hanging Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein was a tyrant, was a Russian. What we know about him, it's the horror that they allege that he used chemical weapons on his own people. Okay, there's a lot of wicked, wicked things that he did. Look what he did to Eretz Yisrael. He put them in a state of terror. He shot 39 Scuds. Okay, 39 Scuds against Eretz Yisrael. He terrorized the nation. They had wear masks, okay, cheder atum, with gas masks. Listen, this guy is no tzaddik. Okay, he's a guy, Hitler. He terrorized Klal Yisrael. He terrorized Yisrael. So when they hung him up, I was very interested. When they hung him up, his executioner told him to put on a scarf. told him to put on a scarf. They hung him, the noose. And he told him, it won't hurt your neck so much. You won't die in such agony. You'll die a more pleasant death.
Just slow.
They didn't tell him to be slow. The guy had Rahman. I remember, you can Google the video. I'm sure you can Google. I'm sure it's there somewhere. They probably didn't censor it yet. And I'm not going to go. I don't want to see this again. So it's interesting. He told him, he obviously had sympathy for him. And I don't know why, whatever it is. And like, even though he had to kill him, he killed him with a certain Rahmanis. Okay, now in that case, he doesn't deserve Rahmanis. Don't tell me he deserves Rahmanis. But this is a dogma, as a dogma. Even in a situation where a person is being put to death, there are different ways. That's then when you do a chesed. The Gemara talks about it, that a parent who a child feeds a parent with disgust. He ain't going to own Abba. No, he did. For giving the tzedakah, it's very good. But for the way to it, I'll leave you off with one mushel. Someone told this to me on Shabbos or on Friday or last week. Two people give tzedakah. One during mincha. One fellow gives a quarter, and the other gives 27 cents. Imagine yourself today by mincha. The guy comes around with the pushka. One guy takes out of his wallet a quarter, puts it in the pushka. The other guy takes out of his pocket 27 cents, a quarter and 2 pennies. A quarter, and he puts it in the pushka. So this fellow, the person who said his chiddush is no longer living, it was his yard site. So the person was selling over stories about the yards, about this person who passed away a long time ago, about him, one of his chiddushei Torah. He was a very big Talmud Chacham, but he's a very big joker. A very big joker. I remember him vaguely. He's a very big joker. And he'd say, he would give this small, he says, two people give tzedakah. One gives a quarter, one gives 27 cents. Which one had a greater kiyum of the mitzvah of tzedakah? A greater kiyum. They both going to get reward. Hashava. One guy gave 25 cents, one guy gave 27 cents. So this guy's going to get hashava. Hashava kivor yodi yoshiv li. They're both going to get reward. One's going to get rewarded in Shabbat for 27, one's going to get reward for 25 cents. Which one is going to get gemul? Which means the way you do it. So this fellow claimed the one that gave the quarter. Because the one that gave 27 cents, what is he doing? He's just getting rid of his loose change. You deal with the pennies. I'm just getting rid of the law. Here's an opportunity to get rid of my loose change. The one that gave the quarter, he says, it's not about coveting to give tzedakah pennies. It's pennies to tzedakah.
Sometimes people give a quarter and they just empty out the rest of their pocket.
Okay, so let tzedakah, you know, in tzedakah, they have the machines that make all the pennies, and make all the pennies. Would you give your grandchild 27 cents? When your grand, Chanukah Geld, Purim, okay? Chanukah Geld, a little kid, he doesn't need more than a quarter. Okay, a little, you give the big kids, you give them $10, $5, $1. You got a little kid, doesn't know the difference.
A
little kid, you give him, so he wants real money. It's a big excitement here. So you give him a quarter. A quarter is more than enough. It's like he thinks he won $1 million. So I give him a quarter. Would you give your little grandchild 27 cents? No, you wouldn't. You wouldn't. You wouldn't. So why is tzedakah so low in our eyes that we give it 27 cents? Because we want to get rid of the loose change. It's a good way to get rid of it. It's a good way to get rid of it. Now you can argue. I personally disagree. Okay, but you know, everyone doesn't tell their opinion. Okay? There is, in life, there is hashava and there is gemul. And I think it was a timely example. Learn this pasuk. Two people, one is 25, gave 27, he gave more money, right?
But also
is that how you give tzedakah? You give pennies? What?
He's a millionaire and he gave a quarter, and the guy's very poor, he gave 27 cents.
27 cents.
No, that's exactly what he's trying to mechadish this person. That the poor man who gave 27 cents, he gave 27 cents. You can't take away the mitzvah of giving two more pennies. You can't take away. But in the big picture, the gemul, he gave less tzedakah than the gvir, than the millionaire. The millionaire gave 25 cents. He gave a covetic matana in this matzah, whatever that means.
Boils down to what was in their mind when you did.
Okay, but generally, you're right, I agree with you 100%, but generally, it's an idea. There's something there. There's a dvar and begav. Yeah.
You need to go around the question. I see people going to pockets, giving a quarter, and I know they're very well to do. And I try to do it myself. I say they're giving a 10 cent quarter, and they should be giving dollars or $5, you know. And then you get someone, a young kid, gives a dollar.
Okay, but you don't listen. We don't know what they give this outside of shul. We don't know that when it comes kol nidre, they write a check of $10,000. So, and also you have to realize these people are very wealthy. They're literally bombarded every second. They're like an ATM machine. I know someone doesn't want to come to shul. He doesn't come to shul anymore. Why? Because he's very, very wealthy. And every time someone sees him, it's all about money, 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 money. Like an ATM machine. Every guy that sees him, you know, he gives a lot of money. He gives a ton of money. He made himself into this. He got himself into this trouble. So every time someone sees him, it's about new. It's time for a new donation, a new project, a new this, a new that. He is sick of being milked like a cow. What is that? I come here to daven. I come here to have friends. I'm not here to be an ATM machine to everyone. So you don't know what people give. So when it comes, they come mincha. So he gives a quarter. He gives a quarter. So it's not you don't really know what goes on. All right, enough said. Let's take a very short break. And today I want to just run through some of the halachas. We'll go very quickly to run through some basic rules, basic halachas for Tainis Esther and Purim night.